Attention, true believers. It is time for you to sit back, relax, and enjoy your next half hour with a brand new episode of Hooked on Comics. Hello, and welcome back to another great episode of Hooked on Comics, the show where we flip through the pages of the comic book world, broadcasting live from kpcradio.com. I'm your amazing host, Michael Lopez, and today I have with me Larry Houston, director and producer of X-Men the Animated Series, among other cartoons that you may have heard of, such as G.I. Joe and Captain Planet. Say hello to everyone, Larry.
Hi, everyone.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. This is a great great day. Even though it's a little warm, it's cool.
And also, just telling everybody, it's Larry's birthday, so I'm just going to assume that you all said happy birthday. All right, let's flip through this page. Were you born and raised here in the San Fernando Valley, Larry?
I was born in Los Angeles, in a part of the town that people call South Central, but it was like, at the time, it was just Los Angeles, about 54th and Vermont, 59th and San Pedro, that area.
And did you go to college anywhere?
Nope, did not go to college. I finished high school and then went straight into employment.
Oh, wow. So how did you get into animation without any, like, educational experience?
It's kind of how I got into it was kind of not the direction people usually go in. But when I left high school, I didn't go into art. I didn't have a lot of confidence, so I became a systems analyst, mainly working for Data General and McDonnell Douglas Aerospace. And I worked at that for like 7 years, but I got bored, and I knew people who were working at Hanna-Barbera and Disney. And it gave me a heads up as to when they were hiring. And so I went and I kind of did this backwards. But I quit my computer job, went to get an animation job, and failed the test twice. Did not get the job. But the interviewer saw that since high school, I had been drawing my own comic books. He saw the work, took me up to the storyboard supervisor. I took the test. Passed it. I mean, I brought it back the next day, which surprised him, but he liked the work. And then I got hired. And that's how I got into the business.
And what comics did you write? Like, do you still have them to this day?
Well, it was mainly a bunch of us. Well, I went to Dorsey High School, and it was like a group of three or four comic book geeks, and we were drawing our own version of, you know, the Avengers or Justice League. We just amongst ourselves for our own entertainment. And I had drawn up, you know, real like sample pages. Because my hope was to go to New York and become a comic book artist. And but what happened was is that allowed me, because the guy interviewing me saw what those pages, he knew more than I did. And that's when he took me up to the storyboard department and I got the job.
And how were your first few years working in animation?
Oh, it was great. It was actually fun. I mean, someone was paying me to draw. It was like, it's the kind of job, it's the kind of thing that, you know, it's something that you would do automatically, even if no one paid you to do it. You're always drawing, and not actually get paid for it was like, oh, God, it was so much fun.
You weren't nervous or anything?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah, very nervous. Because it's one thing to be around your family and friends, and you draw a picture, and everybody goes, ooh, ah, it's great, 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 fine. But when you're in a group of, like, just artists, now you know exactly how good you are. You know, I'm better than this. I'm way less. You know, this guy's way better than me. And I'm, you know, you get an idea of where you stand in terms of your style and your art. And right. So, yeah, quite nervous. And so you knew you had to become better and better to stay with the group. It's almost like a bunch of guys running in the Olympics. They get that, you know, you get that pile of guys running around the track. You want to stay in the track with the pile. You don't want to be left behind, one of the stragglers.
And was X-Men the first project that you worked on, or what else did you work on before that?
The very first project was at a company called Filmation, which doesn't exist anymore. But Lone Ranger Tarzan Hour. And it was like Sport Billy. And those are the two shows I actually first worked on. But when I left Filmation to go to worked for Marvel Productions. The first show was Spider-Man. They had a syndicated series that was out at the time. They needed another 26 episodes to fill out the run. So that's my supervisor was Art Vitello. He hired me from Filmation to do that. And so that's where my first animation job at Marvel was. But that was in 1981 for Marvel, but I didn't get a chance to work on the X-Men until 92.
Wow, and what were the events leading up to the X-Men animated series being created?
Well, we had tried to, at Marvel Productions, we had thrown in like guest stars and snippets into the Spider-Man and Amazing Friends series to try and get the networks like, hey, look, here's some mutants and here's some X-Men, and you know, this could be a good show. And never got a nibble. We even did I was part of the three of us, we did a pilot called Pride of the X-Men. Myself, Rick Holberg, Will Mineo. We were the three directors. Will did Act 1, Rick did Act 2, I did Act 3. We did that as a pilot, a whole half-hour pilot. Didn't get a nibble. But what happened was the boss, the CEO of a company was Stan Lee and a lady named Margaret Lesh. When she left Marvel Productions, she became the head of Fox Kids TV, and she was able to bring us back on board and do the X-Men because she believed in it way back in the 80s that it was a good project and that she believed in it. She was able to get that jump started in the 90s.
And prior to the X-Men, it had such a different, well, not such a different lineup, but why did you guys change the lineup for the Pride of the X-Men into the actual animated series?
Well, the original Pride of the X-Men, what we wanted was that it was going to be X-Men versus the Sentinels. But the coalition of investors who were backing the Pride of the X-Men, they wanted to sell toys. So instead of robots, that's where the line of villains came from, because they wanted action figures. I'm like, okay, we said fine. We just want to sell the show. So that's where the difference came from. And that's why, you know, that's what that line of villains came from.
And watching the show, like, I just can't help but feel like some of the seeds were just ripped out of the comics. So did you actually work with the different writers like Chris Claremont and Len Wein?
No, actually, we didn't work with them directly. We had animation writers here locally. But what happened was is that I am a huge fan, a nerd of comic books. I mean, I I read all the stuff since I was a kid. And a lot of the crew I work with, the designers and the colorists, we're all fans of the X-Men comic books. And so the story editor of the X-Men, his name is Eric Lee Wall, and his wife is Julia Lee Wall. And our belief is that, you know, there's a reason why the books are successful. So when you adapt a book to cinema, our belief is change as little as possible. You know, there's a reason why the books work. Put the books on TV. Now, you have to adapt it because it's a different medium, but you just don't make changes arbitrarily. You just, look, there's a reason, just transfer it to another medium and just make it work as much as possible. So we were all of the same mindset of let's do the X-Men comic book. And so we had writers. One writer, Robert Skier, was very much a nerd like I was, and he knew the mythology really well. And so we were able to do the stories as closely as we could that were from the comic books, you know, the Phoenix, Dark Phoenix, and everything else like that.
And one thing I really like about when it comes to cartoons is the voice acting. So what was it like working with all the voice actors for the main cast?
They were great. I mean, one of the things, the story editor, Eric Lee Wall, is coming out with a book called Previously on X-Men. And in it, they detailed the voice actors that we had to deal with. And one of the early crises, as most people don't know about, was that the first recordings were awful. And they had to send me and several people up to Canada to fix the voice recordings because it was done as if it was a comedy cartoon. And we had to go back and correct all the mistakes, give the voice actors a different direction so that we got the show we wanted to. But it was like, it was going off the rails. I was like, whoa, this is not what we wanted.
And do you still keep in contact with the cast?
Only the one that I stay in most contact with is probably the actress who does Rogue, Lenore Zane. I stay in contact with her. And the other actors, I haven't been really in contact. After, it's been, 25 years, I haven't seen them in a long time. But, if I call them up, they'll probably be, oh, yeah, I remember you. We can talk, pick up where we left off. But, yeah, it's been a while.
And what were some of the most challenging things that you came across when you were, animating or, just making the series in general?
Little production things. I'll give you an example. There's a character called Mr. Sinister, a real bad guy. And he's got this elaborate costume with the ribbed costume. He's got this rooster tail cape. And it will be horrible to try and put the animators through their numbers to try and animate that guy, because there's so much to animate on him. So I made a choice in that whenever the storyboards came in, I would redraw them so that Sinister never moved. Basically, he would come in and out of the shadows. He'd be talking to you in one pose. Then you see whoever he's talking to. When you cut back, he's somewhere else. But I never let him walk or change. I did that as little as possible, so I wouldn't be killing the animators on the animation, And so it actually helped create a different motif, because instead of, he came across as way different than Magneto, who would come in and just, be in your face. This guy was like Dracula coming in out of the shadows. So that's one of the production things that I did to adapt it to the television media.
And what was your favorite episode working on, and what was the worst episode working on that you just found yourself stressing over so much?
I guess the most fun episodes, God, there are several. It's like picking your kids. there's Phoenix, Dark Phoenix. There's one episode that stands out by itself, which is Rogue's Tale, which is the origin of Rogue, and where we flesh out her background and show where she got her powers from. And it was the one episode where we showed Ms. Marvel as a major character in the show. And so that was actually quite fun to direct and storyboard, because I got a chance to redraw a lot of the action sequences, and made sure, I did a lot more with that show than I've done with others to try and course correct and try and make it as best I can. The worst show, I won't call it the worst, but it was the most work, was there was a two-part episode called Time Fugitives, which involved Cable, involved Bishop, and the X-Men. And part one was written by one writer, and story, so you have a storyboard team on that side. And then part two was written by a second writer, who he wrote his story, which kind of based on the first one. And then I had a second group of storyboarders drawing that show. And I had to figure out how to make both shows work, because basically in part one, there's a big fight, and Apocalypse kills the X-Men. The second part is the same fight, but now you got Rogue in it, and then I had to show the same action, but how it was different now that Rogue got into it, but that took a lot of drawing. Luckily, I had a staff of artists that I would rough out the drawings. Okay, this is what happened. I would restage stuff, and some stuff I redrew, but a lot I gave to my team to do the finished drawings, and so that everything worked. But I had to keep track of what was done here, what was done there. And back then, there was it's Xerox machines. You had to, it's old tech, and I had to put storyboards on the Xerox machine. I couldn't, today you would just scan it, put it into the computer, and bing, bang, boom, and it could be done a lot faster. But back then it was a lot more hands-on.
And I know he was a fairly new character when the show came out, and he had, I think, two cameos. But did you guys ever
try to put Deadpool into the show or make an episode centered around him?
No, Deadpool was not as popular. But the thing was, all of the cameos you see in the series are done by me. It was all stuff that I made up, I put into the show. And Deadpool did appear about two or three times. We had a shapeshifter, and so he would shift into Deadpool once in a while. Or there's a sequence where Xavier becomes, his evil self comes out, and he creates the illusion of Sabretooth, and he creates the illusion of Deadpool, and he shoots Wolverine on a train. And there's some other ones where I put in Punisher and everything else, but all of the cameos you see throughout the show, throughout the series, was stuff I was never approved of putting in. I just did it. You know, it was kind of like, it created more enjoyment if you were a fan to see the other characters. But I would always, you know, if you're a regular viewer, you saw it didn't mean anything to it. It didn't destroy. I made sure that it didn't distract from the main story the writer had written, but it was an enjoyment factor that if you were a kid and you saw these other characters, it would create an anticipation that next week, I wonder what other characters they're going to put into the show. And I remember that as a kid reading Marvel comic books, that you'd read a book of Spider-Man and suddenly Thor would go through. And, you know, Stan would write something like, where the heck is he going? And then at the bottom, he'd have a caption that said, if you want to see where Thor going, buy Journey to Mystery, blah, you know, he'd have little notes at the bottom. But what happened was, because he was trying to cross-promote the books, he accidentally created the a connected universe. So I wanted to try and do that with the cartoon show.
And you guys crossed over with the Spider-Man animated series. Did you guys have any creative influence on that, or did they just ask the voice actors to come in?
It's more of the latter. They asked the voice actors to come in. They requested our model sheets, so we gave it to the Spider-Man crew. But that was from that point forward, it was all their production. It wasn't our production. Which was, I should mention that it was very strange because it had to do with rights or whatever. I tried to put Spider-Man in a cameo in one of X-Men shows, and they said no. I went, okay, but it's the same network, you know, what's the problem? But they wouldn't let me do it. So, and what I think in the Phoenix of Dark Phoenix, I snuck a webbed hand come in and shoot out a web and saved some people. But again, I never asked permission after that. After a certain point, I just said, look, I'm going to do it my way. You want to fire me? Fine. I'm just going to do a good show. So that's what I did.
And I forgot to ask some questions in the beginning, but you were a pretty big comic book fan when you were growing up. So who's your favorite hero?
I had for me, growing up, when I was reading the DC comics, it was Superman. And when I got to reading the Marvel books, it was the Fantastic Four and the Thing and stuff like that. Those were my favorites at the time. But a lot of the, what drew my interest was the artist. And my biggest influence as an artist was Jack Kirby, because he could draw these scenes that was so dynamic. And the other one was John Buscema, because he was like excellent at drawing anatomy. And those two would pull me in sometimes more than the story, because I wanted to see what the artwork looked like. And the guy, you know, we're in high school. We're you know, you could imagine going, you know, three or four guys going to the comic rack and getting books. Oh, look at what he drew here. Oh, man, look at this. This is cool. Blah, 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 that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where I was in high school and stuff like that, you know. I forgot the question now.
What's it called? Who was your favorite hero?
Oh, the hero. Oh, okay. So I guess it would be when I was reading DC, it was Superman. When I was reading Marvel, it was, I guess, the Thing. I guess you could say.
And then, were you an X-Men fan?
Yes. I had been an X-Men fan from the beginning. I had almost all their issues. And, you know, at some point I lost them and then I had to rebuy them again.
Oh, no.
And, but it's kind of like, because I was a nerd reading this stuff, that when it came time to do the cartoon show, I had all of this, what I called useless trivia that came in handy in doing the X-Men, because I could course correct either the writer or the artist if they were doing something wrong. I would just fix it at my level to make sure the shows followed the continuity of the books and made sure that it was accurate, basically. So,
and how do you like the X-Men film series?
Mixed, I guess you could say. I really like Days of Future Past because it was a nice reset. I like the very first X-Men show that was done, especially the second one where Wolverine just cut loose and went after all the bad guys. That was fun. It's kind of mixed, you know.
Yeah. Do you think it portrays the X-Men in a good way?
The films?
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to do their best back then. Like I said, the two that come to mind that I enjoyed the most was the first one and Days of Future Past, because they felt like it they were getting the drama and the personalities correctly on those two episodes. Those two films.
All right. Well, we're down to our last couple moments, so I just want to ask you one thing more. It's been 25 years since the X-Men anime series first came out. You guys just had your anniversary. Like, how do you feel looking back from the first day that you started working on the cartoon to now? It has a huge fan base. You guys just had the anniversary, and there was a ton of people there, and then everybody was just congratulating you. Like, how do you feel now?
I feel very blessed. I feel very happy and very blessed, because when we made the show, it was before the internet. We had no idea how people were going to react to the show, how they were going to accept it. We just put out the best show we thought we were going to do. And you got to remember, back then it was like most people thought it was going to be 13 episodes and we're gone. So nobody had any expectations. We were a show that nobody expected to survive. And because I jokingly say we were the show with the least amount of adult supervision, you know, and we got the show done and we did it our way, and then success, then, you know, it just happened to be everybody agreed with us, but we had no idea that it was going to survive, like have a 5-year run, you know. So we were very happy, and I'm very blessed to have been a part of it, you know, to be a kid from South Central to be in charge of one of the best highly rated shows, and to have known that it worked.
All right, everybody, you've heard it from Larry himself. Check out Previously on X-Men. It's a book. Is it coming out soon, or is it
yes,
out now?
Yeah, I think it's coming out in November.
All right, check it out in November. It's a book about the behind the scenes of the creating of the show. And Larry, I'd like to thank you for being on my show, and as a birthday present and courtesy gift, I want to give you this comic book.
Oh, thank you. Oh, cool. I love his work, too. I love his artist.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
No problem. All right, everyone. For KPCRadio.com, I'm Michael Lopez, and thanks for stopping by.